Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, the host of the show. I have so much to talk to everybody about, so we should probably thank the sponsors first before I scare all the listeners away with the show recap and my various rants and whatnot. But first, I guess I should say hi to Dave, too. Hey, DJ Dave. I can't even talk. It's been a while. Hi, DJ Dave.
It's like riding a bike, Carrie.
You never forget. It is. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good.
How's life on the road?
It's been very interesting. We'll talk about that soon. Thank you for taking care of our guest hosts. We had Jane Larkworthy of The Fraudulent Chef in about 2 weeks ago, right? And then Aletra Wiedemann, the impatient foodie. Aletra was here as well.
You better watch out. They're gunning for your job.
They did a good job. I listened to the shows. I was entertained. I'd have them back. Were they good guest hosts?
They were very well behaved.
Well behaved. Yes. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you both for filling in for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, let's thank our sponsors. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from 9-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. Dave, I did definitely have a lot of moments where I was fantasizing about running away to Paris and just going to culinary school.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You should do it.
I know, but yeah. I know, I should.
And Allie, you know what? Allie will be fine. She'll find something.
That's Allie Mish, our producer. Yeah, I don't know. I would really love to do it. I'm curious. I need to talk to some people who actually do it. You know, we've had like Clancy Miller on the show, the writer who did just that. And
Nathan Myhrvold.
Nathan did it too, right?
I guess not at Le Cordon Bleu, but...
Yeah, Nathan's a culinary school grad. I think he worked at, I guess he took time off and did it. Anyway, okay, we digress. Castor and Pollux is the maker of the brand new purposeful pet food line, Pristine. A lot of Bomb Squad members are proud pet parents, so you'll want to know about this grain-free line made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Visit purposefulpetfood.com for more. Make sure to tag your Instagram pup photos with hashtag CherryBombPets. That's a hashtag. Cherry Bomb Pets for a chance to win a year's worth of pristine food for your pet. And we're going to be picking that winner soon. So if you've been thinking about doing this all season long, maybe don't delay. All right. So as Dave mentioned, I've been on the road. The Cherry Bomb Cookbook came out October 10th. Yes, we have a cookbook for those of you who haven't heard about that yet. 100 plus recipes from 100 different women in the food world. All your favorite gals are in there. It's I'm so proud and happy of the book. And now we are crisscrossing the country. We kicked it off at The Wing, the feminist clubhouse in New York City on October 5th, and then traveled to Brooklyn, not that far away, right up the block from our office to Books Are Magic, then to Seattle for a stop at Book Larder. Then we did a jubilee. That was crazy. 500 plus women in San Francisco, and Alice Waters was our keynote, and we did record all the talks. So at some point, maybe even this year, we will get all the New York Jubilee and all the San Francisco Jubilee talks up, because there were really some just insanely talented, incredible people at both, just spouting wisdom left and right. And I think if you weren't there, you'll really enjoy hearing what the different guests and speakers and panelists and whatnot had to say. Then where'd we go after that, Dave? Oh, we went to LA.
I wasn't there, so I forgot
you're back here.
I know you were thinking about me. You carried me with you the whole time.
We were. A lot of radio listeners came up, came to all the different events and said hi and mentioned that they listened to the show. And I told you this before we went on air, but there were actually some people who came to our events who had no idea we have a magazine. So I was like, Yep. So for those of you listening, we have a magazine. We publish twice a year. It's called, ready, Cherry Bomb, the magazine. You can order it from our website or favorite indie bookstore magazine stand. But yes, Cherry Bomb started out with a magazine back in 2013. And I guess because the podcast is weekly, people think of the podcast more. But anyway, if you haven't seen the magazine, go check it out. The new issue will actually be out in a few weeks. All right, then next, what did we do? We went to Kismet. We had a beautiful sort of happy hour with Sarah and Sarah at Kismet in Los Angeles. If you are in LA or going to visit LA, you have to stop by their restaurant. We did a fun night at Barnes & Noble. We had a great panel conversation. Then we went to Indianapolis and hung out with restaurateur Martha Hoover, who has Cafe Patachou and Public Greens and a whole bunch of places. That was at Printtext. Then Monday night, we had an absolutely kick-ass event in Durham. So many people came out for this. I was actually kind of in shock, like over 125 people showed up. And we had a really terrific panel discussion at the Durham Hotel with Chef Andrea Rusing, who is the chef behind the Durham and Lantern. Vivian Howard, who a lot of you probably know from her PBS series, A Chef's Life. She's a good pal, and I crashed at her place Sunday night in Deep Run, North Carolina. Then Phoebe Lawless, who is the force behind Scratch Bakery. I went to both locations of Scratch Bakery while I was in Durham, and I think I bought enough baked goods for like 12 people and brought them all back to my hotel room. And last but not least, Katie Button from Asheville. She has Curate and Night Bell. And we just had a really fun talk, and the audience was great and asked so many questions. And then Andrea's crew cooked us a really kick-ass dinner that night. And I wish I lived in Durham because I would have taken like 10 doggy bags home. But and then in the middle of all this, Harvey goddamn Weinstein, and then all the sexual harassment news, which we will talk about. And we have been talking about. We talked about it in Durham. I had to moderate a panel with Christina Tosi and Kim Malik from Salt and Straw, and some other folks. And at this industry event called Restaurant High, we talked about it there. Obviously, we all have a lot to say on this issue, and we'll talk about this more throughout the show today. But anyway, so I'm kind of exhausted. I've had a really great time. I've met just so many incredible people, and I really appreciate everybody coming out to all the different tour stops. What's our next one? I'm back on the road for Fire Flower Fork. I'll be in Richmond, Virginia on Saturday. I'm interviewing Gabrielle Hamilton, which I'm sort of intimidated by because she's so genius. She's the chef behind Prune. She also authored Blood, Bones, and Butter, an amazing memoir, autobiography, whatever you want to call it. So I'm interviewing her, and then I'm on a panel with Kristen Kish, you know, our buddy, Chef Kristen Kish, and she and I will be signing cookbooks after that talk. And then Saturday night, we are doing something special. It's called the International Women's Supper Club, and this is a virtual dinner party that you're all invited to. We're asking everybody, just get your girlfriends together, cook, and have some really great conversation. If you go to cherrybomb.com, you can download our whole International Women's Supper Club starter kit. We've got playlists, place cards, free recipes from the Cherry Bomb cookbook, all this different stuff. But we really just, more so than ever, we really just feel that people need to connect in person. And I hope you consider doing this. And then share it on social. We'd love to see what everybody's up to. I think, what's our hashtag? CB Supper Club. So you can hashtag that. We've already had people, I think, from over 15 countries download the starter kit, which is fantastic. I really can't wait to see Instagram on Saturday and see what everybody is up to and what you're making and who's hanging out. All right. Our poor next guest has had to listen to all this. I think she's asleep. Stacey, you can wake up now. Sorry. Thank you for being riveted. Patient. All right. So our next guest, I'm really, really excited. And a lot of you who listen know that one of my favorite things about doing Radio Cherry Bomb is I get to hang out with people here in the studio, people I want to hang out with in my real life, but there's just no time because they either don't live here or we're all busy or whatever. So it's a nice excuse for me to get to hang out with and get to know better very cool people like the woman sitting across from me. So Stacey C. Rivera is the digital content director for food at Time Inc. She reads 1,000 headlines a day, people. I don't know how she does this, and specializes in launching and relaunching brands from strategy to budget to staff. Do you consult? Because we might need some help.
Happily.
A graduate of New York University, she also holds a professional pastry and baking arts degree from the Institute of Culinary Education and is maybe one of the only people on the planet that can say she worked at both Hallmark and Playboy. She could be found at StacyRiv3, everywhere the cool kids are. That's your... StacyRiv3. Okay, that's your Instagram account. We'll share that later. Everywhere the cool kids are. We are so happy that she is here. Stacy Rivera, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. And you don't live in New York.
Not anymore.
You are in Birmingham.
I am. I was lured down to Birmingham by the amazing and wonderful Hunter Lewis a year and a half ago.
Some big changes at your company. And tell us some of the digital properties you work on, because everybody knows the names.
Sure. Cooking Light, My Recipes, Extra Crispy, Food and Wine, and we launched Well Done. Did I get them all? Yes.
I think you got most of them. How did you wind up at Time Inc.? You've got a huge job.
Yeah. Hunter. So Hunter and I had worked together at a previous, and he was the editor-in-chief of, and is still the editor-in-chief of, Cooking Light. Mm-hmm. And Time Inc. had made a major investment in their food studio space in Birmingham, particularly in a video area. And he called me down, said, I have this job, and I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be big. And I was like, no, nope, nope. I grew up in New York. I went to college in New York. I'm not leaving New York City. My family's here. I have a seven-year-old. We're not, well, at the time, he wasn't seven. Nope. And he's like, well, just come down. And we went down, and this playground was unbelievable. And the opportunity to work with Hunter on a different level was like too hard to turn away.
Sure. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
I've had some conversations with Hunter, and I think the magazine is in, those properties are in good hands with Hunter. I think his head and his heart are in the right place for kind of what's going on in the restaurant and food worlds at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. He's so thoughtful about his process, and I think a little bit of a peek into what's happening for us at Food & Wine is this is his first year to be presiding over Best New Chefs, and it is the 30th anniversary that's coming, and it is happening at the same time that we are having this moment, and I think that there is no better or more thoughtful person to sit at the helm of that, and I think we have a real ability to help in a way, and to really use that as a filter. And so it's definitely a huge part of what we're talking about right now.
So where did you grow up?
Long Island.
You did.
You don't hear the R?
I grew up in Staten Island.
Okay.
So we can trade bad accents if we want. So you grew up in Long Island, and then you always knew you wanted to be in media?
Yeah, so that's the joke in my family, is that I sort of came out saying I wanted to work at a magazine. I basically only applied to NYU. I applied early admission. I knew I wanted to do that. I knew I wanted to work at a magazine.
You were focused.
Yeah, probably incorrectly, but yes, from a very early age. And
did you have internships in the city?
I did, and that was probably the biggest step.
Same for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was 19 when I had my internship at Henry Holt in the Books for Young Readers department, and realized that books were not for me. They're take too long. And I was 20 when I had my internship at Playboy, and I didn't have to do it during the summer. I did it during the year. And so by the time I was a senior in college, I had already had these two amazing experiences, and that was 100% because I was in New York City and I was focused, and NYU at the time really made it possible to do that. You know, I have a big soapbox about internships and fellowship programs and how it's so sad that they've gone away. Because I would not, no, like just no shot, right? I out of the gate before I graduated college, I already had a step up because I had the ability to intern.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have connections. I didn't have anything. I just had like a killer work ethic.
Yeah.
And back then, I mean, I'm older than you, but back then, you know, you could find internships anywhere, and they didn't pay. You know, you had to have a you had to really hustle and have like a million part, unless your parents had money, which, you know, they weren't giving it to me.
Right.
you know, you really had to hustle. I had like 10 part-time jobs in addition to all my internships, and I'm sure you were the same, but you were a Playboy.
I was.
So what the, and you were 20. What was that like? Were you scared?
No, because Playboy is not the place that people think it is. Or at least it wasn't. So I did have, in this case, I did have a connection in that my college roommate, my junior year, her mother, she came from Chicago, and her mother, Barbara Nellis, who stands as one of my great mentors and will always be, she was an editor at Playboy in Chicago for, and by the time she left, she was there for 30 years. And she did help me. And that's one of those moments where, like, there are women in my life who forever put me on my course, and it's always her. So the New York office was actually, at the time that I was there, was where the fiction editor was. So I worked with Alice Turner, which, like, the access to that is insane. Kevin Buckley was the executive editor, and he was running all, like, investigative journalism out of that office. Chris Napolitano, who then went on to be the editor-in-chief at one point, he was running the front of the book and back of the book. And Playboy 100% taught me how to really do things that a lot of kids coming out of college don't know how to do now, like fact check and report.
Oh, my God.
And one of my, I will say, I had my hands on every issue of Playboy because I had to reorganize the library. And that was my, like, my big job and when I started. And then it was also, I had to reorganize all of the, they kept, so back in the day, I'm so old, they had a room probably double the size of this that was just the library, and they kept newspapers and they kept magazines, not only their own, but everybody else's. And there was just these like huge file cabinets full of the Playboy interview. And every once in a while they needed to be cleaned up, and it was my job. And so I also read, because I had to file them, like years worth of Playboy interview. And that experience was like super invaluable. And that place was full of women who were super empowered. And so, you know, Christy Hefner was running at the time. All of their major editors were women. And when I think about Barbara in particular, I mean, she had a crib in her office. They were very progressive with their staff. And a lot of the women that came out of Playboy, I think, were are not given the credit for actually moving their women at work culture so far ahead. Playboy just wasn't what people
assume.
Yeah.
It's, I would imagine it's easy to assume that. I mean, I did not work for Playboy, but I actually wound up, I was working for a travel magazine, and it turned out to be a front for a kind of sleazy porn operation. I had absolutely no idea. I was there for like a year before I even found out. And, as soon as I found out, I was like, oh my God, I've got to get out of here. It was a bad scene, and talk about like being harassed. The owner, who was the editor in chief of our magazine, or like the, I don't know, maybe he was the publisher, I forget his title. He would actually just call you to come to his office and say, I just wanted to look at you.
Ugh.
And then his like henchman next to him, because that's why the Harvey stuff was so gross, because you recognize this behavior. So he would call you to his office and his henchman just to look at you, and you're a kid and you don't know what to say or what to do. Yeah. You know, you've got your shitty Toyota that you need to pay your car payment on and your rent and, you know. So the henchman's there, and the henchman would be like, you are not going to get him in trouble, are you? And you're like, no, I just want to get out of this effing office right now. You know, and you scamper out and you don't talk to other people about, you know, you have no idea that the same thing is probably happening to like everybody you're working with. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I've definitely had that experience, when I was young, but not at Playboy. Right. It doesn't matter where, it was a million years ago. And I think the guy's even passed,
passed like dead.
Yeah. But I
don't know why I'm laughing at that, but I didn't know what you meant by pass.
Yeah, you just passed.
You flung your hand and you were like, he passed. I'm like, he walked past.
Go ahead. And I was young. I was like in my early, I was like 21 or 22. Mm-hmm. And, we used to have to go deliver issues to him at his house. And it was requested that it be me because, and I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, because he said, send the girl with the big tits. right? And so, and what do I do, right? And I went like an idiot. And sort of came back and kind of was like, that's weird. And then I will say at the time at that, where I was working there, I had some really great male friends there who in subsequent weeks, when it was always asked for it to be me to come, like found reasons why I couldn't or went with me or did something else. But yeah, there was a whole level of like inappropriateness that I think I've been thinking about a lot recently. Mm-hmm. I think the way everybody else has been.
Same. Yeah.
That at the time you're sort of like, I don't know. That's well, a little weird.
I think the sad thing is it was for so long, it just was normal behavior. Yeah. Like you getting harassed was not abnormal.
No.
And you just didn't talk about it. It was like, you know, we breathe oxygen, we get harassed. Yeah. That's, you know, and I'm heartened by these conversations on so many levels, but especially because I think now younger women who are getting into the workforce yeah. know that this is not okay. acceptable yeah. and that they can speak up, that they have allies. Yeah, it's all moving in the right direction. I think that's the only positive
yeah.
thing about all this, but you know, a lot of lives ruined along the way and women's lives. I'm not talking about the guys who harass. I'm glad their lives yeah. are ruined, but for the women who are harassed. But all right, let's switch topics
yeah.
because there's so much I want to talk to you about. You mentioned you're a mom.
I am.
I didn't realize that. How do you work such a demanding job? And I know it's like guys are never asked that question, but I'm curious. I mean, Stacey's got one of the most demanding jobs in the food media world right now. So
it's funny. Part of the way that I do it is that Hunter and I actually talk about it all the time because he's got two kids. And to some degree, there's just a commitment to the day's got to end at some point. And you have to go home and do it. But I don't know. I don't always know that I'm doing a good job. He's 7. And I think when I, you know, there's always someplace else you think you're supposed to be. But I also have the ability to like do special things for him that I would not if I didn't have this job. And
such as, give us some fun examples.
Well, okay, so Timing in Birmingham is a really open and family-friendly place for sure. And so on Friday before Thanksgiving, before Halloween, we all trick-or-treated and had a huge party in the test kitchens.
Oh, that's right? Awesome.
So his access, he's been and eaten things that, you know, he probably shouldn't at 7. he's, you know, met people and had experiences when we've traveled that are just not, you know, the norm for most kids, right? So I have to try to make the best out of the fact that I've had to travel a lot, which was not originally what I thought, and those things are hard, I think. Because we launched Well Done in March, and then I went on a big ad sales roadshow, and then we took over Food and Wine, and, you know, been in New York a ton, and half my team is here now, and there's just a lot of travel, and I think that's the piece that's the hardest. And so it's just finding a way to make sure that when I'm there, I'm present, which is, I think, a commitment that is different at Time Inc. for me than it was at maybe some other places mm-hmm. where, you know, like we just kind of do put the phone down for a couple of hours because we sort of have to.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's great advice for life, though.
Yeah.
Be present.
Yeah, I try. It's not easy.
No, it's certainly not easy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you having fun down in Birmingham?
We are.
I've been a few times. I like Birmingham.
Yeah, we are. I mean, you know, it's so strange. I'm, like I said, born and raised in New Yorker, and I have this like big house now that I don't know what to do with, and I didn't have enough furniture for. And there, we live in Homewood, which, you know, I'm very much in a bubble in Birmingham in terms of like we were able to pick a place that there were like-minded people, and Time Inc. is Time Inc. no matter where it is, but it's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stories I think I tell people all the time when they ask me about the difference is like, so I lived in Fort Lee just before I left, and we were 5 miles away from the Bronx Zoo, and we were members, and we never went because like that 5 miles could sometimes take 2 hours and could just, it was just impossible. So now we go to the zoo all the time, and it's not the same as the Bronx Zoo, right? But we go. And I think that that's a big difference, right? In what the life is like to move down there. It's not, so Mary Frances Heck just recently joined us in Birmingham, as, senior food editor for Food and Wine, and we were talking, and it's like, yeah, there's great places to eat, and the food culture there is amazing, and the beer culture there is so much fun and has brought so much life to the city. And so we'll become regulars, you know. I mean, we won't necessarily be at, you know, there's not as many options, but that doesn't, but the options we have are great, and like they're, and it's just a good place to be a person and not be a food media person, if that makes sense. And so being a person kind of felt important, you know.
So have you met Pardis Stitt yet?
I've not met Pardis yet. No, I've done like a drive by, like, but not.
Pardis and her husband have Highlands Barn Grill. She is one of my favorite people on the Southern food scene. Yeah. I think she's just so warm and wonderful. But you need to become friends with Pardis. Yes. And then, have you met John C. Hall yet from Post Office Pies?
I have. Yeah.
I love him. Yeah. Oh my God. And I love that place.
We're there all the time.
Yeah. I would be there all the time if I lived down there. Amazing pizza, good beer, you name it. Tell him I said, I haven't seen him in a while, but tell both of them I said hi next time you see them. So we get asked a lot for advice on how to break into the media, as I'm sure you do all the time. I mean, I probably, in all seriousness, get an email once a day about that, as you do. And it's not that it's harder and harder to give an answer or give guidance, but like you said, you know, with internships disappearing and so many outlets now and places paying less if you're a writer. I mean, what advice do you give now for people who want to break into food media?
So Time Inc. does still have fellowships. And I think that not assuming that you have to start off in New York City is probably a good way to go now, because it used to be that that was the door and you had to come here and it was the only way. And I think actually the opportunities are in other places now. And because of social media, it's easier for talent to get found than it ever was before. I think that you still need to have basic skills that they just don't come out with, and learn them, please. It's not just about, it is about fact checking and it is about understanding how to, you know, put a sentence together. It's not enough that you're awesome at taking a photograph on Instagram. And I think one of the things and I think be realistic about what you're walking into. So I think one of the things we face a lot is everybody thinks that the job is the, you know, what happens on Instagram. And the reality of it is like, okay, you may be going to get to do a Facebook Live or do like occasional recipe testing, or, you know, sometimes you'll see some food that you can take a picture of, but most of the time you've got to be ass in the seat, like producing.
Right. Right.
And, you know, and you have to have that skill. And I think that a lot of times there's a little bit of a sense of like, that the job's all the social pieces, and the reality is that it's not. It's actually a lot of the other pieces.
The fact checking and the proofreading are biggies. I can't believe how many writers of all ages and professional stripes will send in their stuff not really proofread, not really fact checked. A lot of people don't understand the difference between a transcript and a story. And just if you're a writer out there aspiring or whatever, fact check. Oh my God. Yeah. Like, I've had people turn in stories with the names of the subject spelled incorrectly. They've quoted a person who they actually didn't even interview. They just mixed up the names. Yeah. And it's like, wow, gals, like, you've got to be on top of this stuff. So you're right. It is but that's the same with everything. Like, you've got to master the basics, whether you're in the kitchen, whether you're in a test kitchen, a radio station, whatever. All right. So tell us, running out of time. So tell us something cool we should check out in your universe, your professional universe right now.
Oh goodness.
Thanksgiving's coming up. What cool stuff is online?
So last year we did, the first ever sort of cross-brand Thanksgiving marathon, the Tuesday before, kind of like as a throwback to that old school magazine, Mana phone line to answer your readers' questions for your cooking questions. So we did it last year on Facebook. 11 brands at Time Inc. participated, not just the food brands, but, you know, Time and Sports Illustrated. And we are going to do that again this year. We're trying to figure out where our venue is going to be. We might change it up, but we'll definitely be there for you on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving in a really fun way. I think you know, my baby is Well Done, which is the video first brand that we launched in April, and we've hit 500 million views.
Wow, good for you.
And what I'm most excited about that is that it's not just recipe hands and fans, and we've been able to like really broaden the kind of content we're doing in there in a new and fun way, and I love that. I love the team that's doing that, and they're really smart. Tonight, part of the reason we're in New York is tonight is the 30th anniversary for Cooking Lights party at the MOFAD. We're going to, Hunter's moderating a panel, Kat Kinsman's on it, and talking about hashtag the new healthy, hashtag. And then, I mean, I think for what's to come at Food and Wine in general, right? I mean, we're really starting to solidify what's happening and the team there. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people feel like most of the team moved to Birmingham. That's not entirely true. Actually, a good portion of the team is still in New York, and the digital team's still in New York, and we're ready. And we're ready to go. It's going to be fun.
Well, we are super excited to check out everything you've been up to. Go to Well. It's
and
just
I
Well
forgot
Done.
Extra Crispy.
Oh, Extra Crispy. Well, you mentioned Kat.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, Kat's baby. So yeah, check out extracrispy.com, check out welldone.com. Yeah. And keep an eye on all the stuff that Stacy is up to. We're thrilled. I know how
Thank
busy you.
You
are. I'm thrilled you came all the way out here.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. This is great.
Oh, and hopefully we'll have you back and we'll see you down. I have some family down in the Birmingham area.
Amazing.
So hopefully I'll see you one of these days. But thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And we will be right back with more Radio Cherry Bomb.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, the Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world. Or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu. for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
Hey there, Bomb Squad. This is Donnie Yen from Team Cherry Bomb. My dog Teddy is a regular at Cherry Bomb HQ, and I care about where his food comes from just as I do my own. That's why Teddy and I are excited about Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Castor and Pollock's new line of pet food is made with ingredients like grass-fed beef and wild-caught salmon. I love that they care about Teddy as much as I do. And as for Teddy, he gives it two paws up.
So we're here with Hawa Hassan. She gave us a great recipe called Maruk Daga. How did I do on the pronunciation, Hawa?
You did well, Carrie.
So, Hawa, tell us about this dish that you gave us the recipe for.
I gave you guys a Somali chicken stew with yogurt and coconut milk, which is called Maruk Daga. And it's rich with turmeric, cardamom, ginger. The stew is a staple in Somalia and in my family. It's very reflective of all the flavors of my home country and my mom's pantry. Somalia is on the longest coast of all of Africa, so we were heavily involved in the spice trade from India. So a lot of these ingredients in here and a lot of the seasonings would be something that is very familiar to any home cook. That's because things like cardamom and curry powder are staples in our cuisine.
Why did you decide to give us this recipe?
It's one that's close to home. It's one that my mother used to make often. It's one that all my sisters are kind of experts at. I'm the last one to really catch on to this. I've just recently been allowed to start making it for people. Yeah, I think it uses all of the spices that are special to us in Somalia. It's one that you could share with a group of people. I thought it would be a perfect fit for your cookbook, considering that, you know, we're living in a time where coming together around a table with a group of eight people is not so strange on a weeknight.
I will say one thing that's amazing about this recipe is your apartment will smell incredible.
I love that. I co-sign.
There are just so many really lovely, fragrant spices and ingredients in this. It was a lot of fun to make it. So, Hawa, you know how much we love your Boss Boss sauce line, and it's a beautiful line of Somali condiments. If you were going to pick one that goes perfectly with the stew, which one would it be?
I would say the coconut cilantro chutney, only because it's so different from the dish, and it gives you the option to add heat on the side. The red sauce that we make, which is our tamarind date sauce, has a lot of the same seasoning that are in this recipe. So just to give yourself a different flavor and to maybe bring out even the warmer spices in here, I would use the coconut cilantro chutney.
So Hawa, thank you for sharing this recipe with us, and please thank your mom as well.
I will. Thank you so much for having me, you guys.
Our pleasure. Take care.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. You're back with Radio Cherry Bomb. Dave, I never... where am I going with this? You didn't let me do an intro. People had no idea what they were just listening to.
Well, I'll explain it now. Go into it right from the break, and you said, yeah.
Oh, meaning like I wanted to intro it, but that's okay. Dave and I are usually more in sync than that. So
we're always finishing each other's sandwiches.
For those of you who have no idea what the hell you just listened to, we just debuted a new feature called the Cookbook Call-In. And we were talking with Hawa Hassan. You know, Hawa's a favorite of ours. She has that company called Boss Boss Sauce. It is a line of Somali condiments that we are absolutely obsessed with. But Hawa gave us a recipe for the Cherry Bomb Cookbook. So over the next few weeks, we will have little interviews with some of the folks from the cookbook explaining a little bit more in depth what their recipes were all about. So if you have the cookbook, you can open it to Hawa's Somali stew and check it out. All right. I'm very excited about our next guest for so many reasons. His name is JJ Good. He is a writer. He has co-authored so many cookbooks, a lot of our favorites, like A Girl and Her Pig by April Bloomfield, A Girl and Her Greens, also by April Bloomfield. His two current books are The Drinking Food of Thailand, which he co-authored with Andy, is it Ricker? I never know.
Ricker. Yeah.
And State Bird Provisions. He writes for all the publications we know and love. He and I met at a Sever blogger luncheon.
Oh yeah.
Over a year ago. I promised I'd give him a Cherry Bomb tote bag and then promptly never delivered did. On that promise.
Still waiting.
And, I did not invite him to be on Radio Cherry Bomb though, until about 2 weeks ago. And I will tell you all why in a minute. But in the meantime, JJ Good, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you. I want to know why.
Well, I'll tell you why. And I'm not normally hunched over the microphone like this. My, I don't know, for whatever reason, my microphone is like, doesn't want to stay in place. Oh. But in case you're like, she has funny posture when she's on the show, that's why. You can't see any of this that we're talking about. But anyway, so October 5th, all the Harvey Weinstein stuff.
Oh, dear, yes.
Hits the fan. And I think it took a day to sink in what was really happening. And then, you know, the New York Times broke the story. They had done months of reporting. Then maybe a week later, the New Yorker piece came out and you really just realized how horrific what had been going on was going on. And then, wait, are you going to, can I read the email you sent?
Oh.
Do you mind?
Sure.
That was you who sent
it. Sure,
this.
Yeah.
There's not another JJ Good out there, right, that sent this email. So, okay, so then on October 9th, I get this email from JJ, which was interesting because JJ and I aren't friends. Now we are. After today, we're friends. But we weren't friends and we don't normally email. But I got this email from him and it said, Women in Food. Hello, Women in Food, I know. After the Harvey Weinstein news and the BuzzFeed story on the equally horrid Milo and his undercover enablers in the media, I thought I'd send a note to all of you just to say that I will be a friend and a safe person for you or anyone in our industry who has experienced anything even remotely like this. And of course, please pass it along if you know someone who needs an ally. JJ. And that was it. I don't even know if you know how remarkable it is that you sent out that email.
I don't, I guess.
And I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I was at a dinner last night for Jane's Beard. It's a supper club for queer and lesbian women. They had a really fun party with Chef Kristen Kish last night, whose new cookbook came out on Tuesday. And somehow we got talking about the radio show, and I started showing women this email, and they were passing it around. And they were like, you have to post that. That has to go viral. Like, we need more people like him. So I'm just curious, like, what prompted you to send out that email?
That's a good question. I don't know. I have a lot of women friends, I think. And I saw, and I, the Harvey revelations kind of brought it up yet again. But I've been hearing for years and years about stuff like this, but mostly the more kind of smaller, more insidious stuff. And I just didn't know, you know, it's the typical thing where you're like a man and you're like, well, I'm not like that. I'm a good one. And you start to think about it's funny. I use the word safe. I don't think I would use the word safe again. Because part of what I've learned after this Harvey Weinstein stuff, and after I sent that email, and after people emailed me back, and some people told me some stories and shared their experiences in media and in restaurants, I realized that I like to think of myself as safe. I know in my heart I'm a safe person. And I naively think that because I'm married and have a kid that I'm a safe person, which is so silly and absurd now, because Harvey Weinstein was married and had kids and literally used that to convince women he was a safe person. So I don't know. I've started to look back on all my behavior, mainly like funny jokes, like things I thought were like so like coming from a safe person, and you know, people would share things that were hurtful to them, and I would think, oh, like, yeah, but he didn't mean it that way. Like this typical yeah, but. And in talking to women, you know, you realize the biggest piece of advice I got from the women who responded to this email was listen. And some of them said, like, one friend said, listen. And she said, no, really listen. And it made me think, like, oh, right. My instinctual response is defensive, and I want to distance myself from this sort of insidious behavior. I'm not a part of it. But that's not what I meant. But that's making it about me. And I need to start thinking about how, you know, I can make a casual joke as a quote unquote safe person and ruin someone's day because I brought up casually something really hurtful. And I don't know. I wanted to make the email not about me somehow. And that's one thing that makes me happy about not having social media. I feel like posting on social media is nice because it would be a nice way to indicate to a larger number of people that I want to help and whatever way I'm able to. But there's something feels like, this is probably just not, I don't know the etiquette of social media, but it's something like grandstandy about it. I think a personal email.
You know, I think there are two ways to go with that. I really appreciate that you sent out that personal email, but at the same time, I think there's been a lot of silence and a lot of women are confused as to why guys are being so silent about this. And in the I've had so many conversations now about it. And I think it ranges from like what you've said, the yes, but where, you know, these guys aren't serial harassers. They probably laughed at stupid jokes or maybe told some stupid jokes themselves, but did nothing to sort of like stop things that were going on. And they're just afraid maybe I did something to contribute to this and they don't want to be the, you know, throwing the stone in the glass house.
Right. And it sucks to hurt people. It sucks to hear that you've hurt people and you want to convince yourself that you didn't and that you're not like that. And
I think it's also just this culture of, like I was talking about with Stacey earlier, it just was so pervasive to the point of normalization. And, you know, it's not that you turn, yeah, I guess we all turned a blind eye to it. You know, there were so many times when so many of us probably could have spoken out, did something differently, and we just didn't. Now we're all sort of doing a lot of reexamining of what we could have done. Or even if you were the victim of blatant harassment and you didn't say anything, why, you know, and why not? And now it's hit the food industry, you know, the restaurant industry big time. And I'm sure, you know, all the the stuff that came out about John Besh is not even the tip of the iceberg right. as to what's going to come out next. But anyway, again, like we said with Stacey, I think it's good that we're having these conversations because it's important for young women to know that this isn't normal, that that maybe it was normal, but it's not right and it's not acceptable. And you can speak up, and there are people out there who will listen to you and who can help. And I hope this chips away at it very rapidly.
I found it's helpful for me to speak to, like, not just more casual friends, but like your really, really close friends, like women who do know your heart, and have those honest, like, yeah, but response with them. And it, you know, no, I don't want to say like, it's not up to women to like convince men to think, but it is really helpful to hear a woman challenge your instinct and to help you see it a different perspective. I think you need to find someone you're comfortable with making that mistake and to not feel like you're going to be, chased out of New York or something when you make a mistake, but you need to figure out a way to get yourself out of your perspective and mm-hmm. see how women really feel about this. Again, as my friend said, like, actually really figure out how to listen.
Yeah. I mean, it's massively complicated, the whole thing. And I think we're all just sort of, I don't know, puzzling our way through this. And but again, it's good that we're talking about it. It's good that a lot of this stuff is coming to light. So, but thank you from all, from, I don't know, I can't speak for all women, but I'm sure for a lot of women I know, they would thank you too. So thanks for just taking the time and being enough of a sensitive soul to send that email our way. All right. Now we're going to talk about your cookbooks.
Oh boy.
Ready?
Good transition.
JJ, it was funny when JJ and I were emailing, he's like, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, oh, you know, nothing heavy. No, I was kidding.
Just Harvey Weinstein.
I warned you a little bit what we'd be talking about. But I get the sense that because you are a compassionate human being, somebody who's like clearly very nice to be around, is that what makes a good co-author? Is that how you've come to co-author books with all these big personalities?
I think so. I think it's about, yeah, I think the whole cookbook process is about listening and is about sort of drawing people out. People who aren't used to sitting down at all. They're used to like running around kitchens, but aren't used to sort of trying to articulate their story. And people who are used to the media, used to getting asked these questions like, oh, I love your duck dish. Well, what's the story behind the dish? And they're like, well, I like duck. So I roasted it. And here's some sunchokes, you know? And trying to get beyond that involves like getting to know the people, becoming friends with them essentially. And like, putting them in ease. And I like to hear people who have spent 20 some odd years doing what they're doing. I'm from New Jersey. I've never lived more than 2 hours away from home. And I really don't think I have that much to say about food, but I love helping these people say it. I mean, April's funny because Andy, the guy, Andy, the Pock-Pock guy.
It's okay. It's Radio Cherubim. You can refer to him. Later.
Good. He has a lot to say, because he's like basically an observer of this very specific regional cuisine, Northern Thai food, for the most part. But April is kind of like, she takes what she does as so obvious. She's like, of course I made this carrot avocado salad with citrus and chilies and cumin and coriander. Like, she has trouble figuring out why she did what she did and how she created it. So sometimes the conversation is like helping her, I think, tease out like, why am I such a good cook?
I think when people see that a chef had a co-author, they're confused. They're like, does that mean the chef didn't write the book? You know, but chefs aren't writers
right.
per se. So what exactly what is your role?
That's a good question. I usually take sort of germ of an idea, and help them turn it into like a 250 page giant book. In Andy's case, he had a very clear idea of what he wanted to do. In fact, I probably was the opposite of helpful, because in the beginning, I tried to convince him. I was like, oh, so you want to do like an easy Thai 1-2-3 book? He's like, absolutely not, you're insane. So what he decided to do was this like sort of rigorous study of the food he's learned to cook, most of which is from Thailand, and he wanted to present it without concession to the home cook. And he's totally sold me on that. The idea of recipes being not just something we use to make dinner on a weeknight, but something that like reflects a culture, and he wanted a written record in a sense of how these things are made. Some of which, you know, some of these recipes don't appear in English, and he wanted it on paper. This is how it's done. This is how it's good. And so basically I watch the chefs cook. Sometimes we're working from a recipe, sometimes they're just cooking, and I absolutely ruin their lives by asking the stupidest questions, because I'm not a particularly good cook. I love cooking. I'm an ambitious cook, but I don't really know what I'm doing. So I want to do what they're doing so badly, but I need help, and I assume the reader needs help, the eventual reader of the book.
So you're the perfect combination of the talent and then the person who will actually be making these.
I'm
recipes.
Like a reader, an advocate for the reader, like. I know this. I know I'm going to buy this book. If I wasn't writing it, I would buy it. I want it so bad, and I need help figuring out like when the chicken's done. How do you know how much to pound the galangal? You know, all that stuff, all that unfamiliar stuff. And of course, is telling the story of the dish or the chef's story, and they have a hard time with this. I've found they're not. You know, they for the most part they like to like be in the kitchen cooking. And they don't think of themselves in the sort of grandiose terms that people in food media tend to ascribe to them.
April's fascinating in that respect.
Yeah.
I find her, for as big a personality as she is, I find her to be incredibly modest.
Yeah, it's totally authentic. She used to do this thing where she would make a dish and I'd be like, oh my God, how did you get the fennel to taste like? It says, oh, it's just really good fennel, mate. It's like she was always like blaming the ingredients.
Don't you love her little Britishisms?
Oh my God.
She's like, I don't want to be a Moni Mini. And I'm like, what's a Moni
what?
Mini?
Moorish. That's another one she always says, Moorish, which I didn't understand what that meant.
What does that mean?
So if something is Moorish, it means you want to eat more of it. It's one of those amazing, like, oh, of course that's what that word means. But I thought she was talking about the Moors,
right,
like the Spanish. I don't know. It's really funny.
That's funny. You want to know why I love Andy Ricker?
Tell me.
Because he's a cat lady.
He is a cat lady. I know people who have followed him because of his obsession with cats, mm-hmm. and people who have unfollowed him. My wife included. She's like, I stopped following Andy on Instagram. I'm like,
he is a total cat lady.
It's also completely authentic.
Yes.
He loves to do this thing where he picks stray cats up and he holds them under their little armpits and they kind of stretch their arms out in this hilarious way. Ugh. He's so weird. It's very endearing, I think. It makes him, you know, because otherwise, he seems otherwise rather imposing. He's got like all these tattoos and he's like 6,000 feet tall.
And then he's just
playing
a cat
with
lady.
Cats.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. We only have like 30 seconds left for the show, but what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I am, for the first time in a long time, not going anywhere.
Ooh.
I might even be cooking for the first time. Usually I am subjected to my father's cooking, including his famous canned sweet potatoes with pineapple and raisins. This year, I might not make that. So I'm very excited.
Any dishes that you have in mind?
Stuffing. Just lots of stuffing. Just all stuffing, actually.
Tell us a stuffing secret. Ooh, all stuffing.
I don't know any stuffing secrets. I'm not a good cook, remember? But I'm going to follow somebody's recipe for stuffing. So maybe someone could tell me an awesome stuffing recipe that has to have sausage in it.
Mm.
And maybe oysters.
Ooh.
Maybe
you
I
know,
can finally
I've never
make
had oyster,
oyster
stuffing,
stuffing,
but I've
Me
always
neither.
Wanted that. All right, maybe I'll crash.
That's what I'll do.
Maybe I'll crash your
please do.
Thanksgiving, JJ. Well, listen, thanks again for being a decent human being. We appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
You and I will have to hang out at another date, and I will bring... Oh, wait, we're having pizza.
Pizza.
Yay, we are hanging out. I forgot. So I still owe you a tote bag, but that's we can
that's
make
coming,
that happen.
That's coming.
Absolutely.
Just another reason to hang out.
All right, well, JJ, thank you so much. If you want to support one of the nice guys, go check out the State Bird Provisions Cookbook or the Drinking Food of Thailand Cookbook or April Bloomfield's two cookbooks, which we love to death.
Awesome.
They should be in everybody's cookbook collection. So that is it for today's show. It's been nice being back. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore. Dave,
Yes.
Thanks. I missed you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I missed you too.
Much love to Castor and Pollux for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. If you are a devoted pet parent like I am, be sure to check out Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. As always, we'd like to say a big thank you to Le Cordon Bleu. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we have a few more stops on the Cherry Bomb Cookbook Tour. Be sure to go to cherrybomb.com for more. And don't forget, this Saturday night is the International Women's Supper Club. Go to the website and download our starter kit. One last stop, Monday night. If you're a New Yorker, we will be at the 92nd Street Y on Monday night for a really fantastic panel about cookbooks and creativity. We have the whole creative team from the Cherry Bomb Cookbook. Claudia Wu, our creative director, Alpha Smoot, the photographer, Claudia Fika, who is our insanely talented food stylist, and Katya Grief, who is our prop stylist. When do you ever get to hear from a prop stylist? I mean, really. So tickets are on sale right now. Go to cherrybomb.com and look up the cookbook tour and just follow the link. And we would love to see you on Monday night. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Hi, my name's Claire Welly, and I'm a cook at a small bistro called Otway in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or to learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is bomb? Alex Baker at Eve's Restaurant in Tribeca. I've known Alex for a few years now, and I instantly knew this woman would do great things. An extremely talented cook, she's always thinking about doing more and doing it better. Having her on the line next to me were some of the best times I've had. Baker, you're crushing it.